You're going to teach here in a few weeks one conference or one panel, have a panel about 100 years of Russian Revolution, which you told me is a little bit provocative here in a conservative place like Beaumont. And you're going to have a seminar soon about Islam, which in a way seems also a bit challenging to this place here. What are you what are your leading motivations and what are your most important messages you want to pass on?
Well, I'll take Islam first. I just want people to have a basic understanding of Islam because there's a great deal of ignorance on Islam. And with respect to that understanding, I want people to be able to analyze the issues and to get some critical distance from them. So what do I mean by analyzing? I think there is, and this is very complicated, there is what pertains to Islam per se. You know, there are those features that are distinctly Islamic. But there are also features that are more general. They pertain to all religions. I mean, fundamentalism is on the rise in this world. And it's not just Islam that is subject to it. I mean, in this country, Christian fundamentalism is on the rise. You have Hindu fundamentalism. So it's not just Islam. So there are certain features that are specific to Islam, but there are features that are more general that pertain to religion in general. But there are also features that are products of history and culture. And the reality is modernization came to the Islamic world as Westernization. And that's had a major impact because it came to the Islamic world through Western imperialism. And so I want people to be able to kind of separate out the issues and think more clearly about them and just learn a little bit about Islam and the Islamic world, because it is something that in this country there's a lot of demagoguery involving Islam. But there are actually really are serious issues, I think, with respect to the Islamic world and what course it's on that need to be confronted, and confronted openly and honestly without demagoguery, but through a sort of analytic and intellectually informed outlook. With respect to the Russian Revolution, you know, this country was one side of the Cold War, right? And we were just the Soviet Union, the United States. That's the Cold War. And I would like to, you know, the Cold War has been over for almost 30 years. I'd like to try to cut through some of the Cold War propaganda that still clouds people's vision and get a clearer sense of what was actually going on during the October Revolution and how it went awry. I identify with the political tradition that both got kind of smeared by the Soviet Union and Stalinism, but also was deeply antipathetic to Stalinism at the same time. I see myself as a member of the anti-Stalinist left. And there, you know, really are a lot of anti-Stalinist leftists out there who never embraced the Soviet Union as some, you know, savior for humanity, but saw the tyranny for what it was, but never also lost sight of the ultimate goal of human emancipation, and you know, believe that the choice ultimately, and I think this gets back to the crisis of capitalism, that the choice really is kind of socialism or barbarism. You know, the capitalist system has failed in the most monumental way it could. It is actually threatening the entire planet with climate change and the destruction of biodiversity.
Yeah, we have.
I mean, it's amazing.
We have a series of books and lectures going on in German media, Rethinking Marx. So what could it mean to American terms, Rethinking Marx?
Well, basically what I want to do is break, there's a sort of linkage that's made. First, you start with the Soviet Union as constructed by Stalin. Then that's projected back onto Lenin, which is then projected back onto Marx. And each one of those projections is mistaken. Lenin was not Stalin, but Marx was not Lenin. And there's there is some democratic impulse in Lenin, and there are some other very problematic ideas. I think the democratic impulse is much stronger in Marx and Engels. And it, to me, it really is about extending democracy from the political realm to the economic realm by taking control of the means and forces of production and employing them democratically and enabling ordinary workers to have a say into the conditions under which they produce their goods and services and the way those things are then sold. So I want to kind of break the linkage and see Marx, and I think more accurately, as somebody who understood that you can't really have a political democracy effectively when, you know, most of our lives are lived in the economic sphere, in the sphere of production, in which institutional structures are authoritarian and not democratic, and trying to break down the authoritarian nature of those institutional structures. Now, that would be probably pretty, some Marxists would probably take exception to that. I'm a bit of a revisionist, so.
Here's a final question, coming back to the toxins of the American history accumulated.
Yes,
and
with,
do you still feel you're living in a superpower, a country that's a superpower, or how would you?
I would say I'm living in a declining superpower, which I think makes the situation rather dangerous.
Like the end of Rome, or?
I don't like to draw historical parallels because all historical periods are different. And I don't really think history repeats itself. Things are different. But that would be something like that. We're not falling apart, but we're no longer the dominant country that we once were. Right? I mean, even in the bipolar world of the Cold War, the United States was still more powerful than the Soviet Union. And within a large swath of the world, was dominant. Now it's more of a multipolar world. And economically, we're no longer quite so dominant. Eventually, China will have a larger economy. And I think that that's very threatening to a lot of people. And making that transition from being the most powerful nation in the world, and we still are militarily, but we're losing that economically to a situation where we can accept that we are one nation among many, I think is going to be challenging. You know, the Make America Great Again is really, I mean, Donald Trump's goal is really, it's appeals to a number of senses of loss, right? The loss of the dominance of white Christian America, the sense of loss that white working class male voters primarily felt that they lived in a time where they were at least respected and had some status, and now that's all being lost, including their jobs. The loss of American power and prestige in the world. I think it's an appeal across a number of dimensions to this sense of loss. And that, you know, people, when they start feeling loss, I think they become a little bit more dangerous in trying to regain what they've lost rather than adapt to a new reality. In some ways, you know, when it comes to, I mean, we're going to be a majority-minority country within the next few decades. You can try to hold back the tide, right? Or you can embrace it. I'm one of those who say good riddance to that. It was never such a great time to begin with. And we should embrace this new reality, right. This new diversity. And, you know, there is a tradition of American radicalism that goes back to Tom Paine, who was a working class radical from England, came over here and became one of the chief ideological spokesmen of the American Revolution, then later the French Revolution. And Tom Paine said that all men are my brothers, the world is my country, and to do good is my religion. I mean, that's a paraphrase. And that's kind of my view. I would, as a philosophy professor, I'd probably tweak it a little bit to give it more precise language. You know, all humans are my siblings, the world is my country, and to do justice is my religion. But I think there are those elements within the American political culture that we can embrace. And we're going to need to if we're going to negotiate this new reality. We're going to have to accept, you know, this wide array, this diversity of peoples as equals, as is laid out in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and actually the Gettysburg Address. So.